Today is Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Bonnie McAllister. And Bonnie spells her last name McAllister. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Bonnie. How are you today?
I'm great.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your willingness to let us conduct this oral history with you. Bonnie, since we're doing this over the telephone, may we have your permission to record this conversation?
You have my permission.
Thank you. Bonnie, what year were you born?
1946.
And where were you born?
Mount Trumbull, Arizona.
Okay. Can you describe for me Mount Trumbull? I don't think there's a hospital out there.
There is not.
Okay.
So I was born at home.
Okay.
And my father delivered me.
Okay. And what was your father's name?
Chester Marion Bundy.
How do you spell Chester Marion?
Chester is C-H-E-S-T-E-R. And then Marion was his middle name.
Okay.
M-A-R-I-O-N.
And Bundy, B-U-N-D-Y? Okay.
Correct.
What was your mom's name?
Genevieve.
How do you spell that?
G-E-N-A-V-I-E-V-E.
Okay, what was her maiden name?
Her maiden name was Bundy.
Okay.
She was adopted.
Okay.
Okay. So she's not a blood relative.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's start with your mom here, because I'm curious that she was adopted. What's her story? How did she come up to meet your dad, and where was she from?
Okay, my grandfather adopted two children. Chloe was my grandmother, C-H-L-O-E, and these two children that she had were by different fathers.
Okay.
But she met my grandfather. I'm not exactly sure how they met. I assume that it was on the Arizona Strip.
Okay.
Because my grandfather would have been a young man then. And grandma's family, they were Van Leuvens.
How do you spell that?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll have to look that one up.
Okay. is that roughly V-A-N-L-U-B-E-N?
No, V. V as in Victor.
Yep.
L-U-V-E-N, yes. Van Leuven.
L-A-U-V-E-N. And, okay.
Mm-hmm. And she met my grandfather and married him.
And he was a Bundy.
He was a Bundy.
Okay.
That's why her maiden, and he adopted those two girls.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So that's why her maiden name is Bundy also.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And what was your grandfather's name on your mother's side?
James.
Van Leuven.
That was, no, James Bundy.
James Bundy, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Uh-huh. James Bundy. It was my dad's, an older brother of my dad. In fact, they were 13 years apart and both born on the same day. 13 years apart.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm trying to figure this out. So your dad's older brother married a woman named Chloe, but your dad's older brother had adopted two girls that your dad ended up marrying one of those girls.
Correct.
And that's your mom.
That's right.
Okay, all right. Thank you. I had to make sure I get this clear.
I know. It's very confusing.
When did your folks move out to the Strip, or were they, was your father's father out on the Strip before before your father was born?
No, my father, my grandfather Abraham, came from Nebraska.
Okay.
He moved his family. They came by covered wagon, and they were going. He had joined the Mormon Church.
Okay.
Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, mm-hmm. better known.
Yep.
He wanted to come to Utah, but he didn't have a lot of money.
Okay.
He had a farm in Nebraska and was doing very well, but his wife, Ella, joined the church before he did.
Okay.
And she was ridiculed by many of the people that lived there. And when it came time to bale the hay, no one in the community would help.
Oh, my.
Because she had joined the church. And so he put his land up for sale and sold it for $1,000. The man gave him $100 down and then never paid the rest.
Wow.
And later on, another man came to him and said, I will buy the purchase the land and give you the rest of the money. And so he sold it to that fellow for $100 and still never got the rest. So
wow.
That was it. He got $200. Anyway, they moved to, started to Utah. They ran out of money and food, and so they stayed in Morgan, Utah for about 3 months. In the meantime, that's where Grandpa joined the church.
Okay.
Along, yeah. And so he had heard then that there was lots of room in Mexico, and that they should go there. So he took his family by covered wagon. They went to Morelos, Mexico, and my dad was born the day after they got there.
Oh, my. What was the name of the town again? Can you spell it?
It was Morelos, M-O-R-A-L. I think it's E-S.
Morales, yes. Okay.
Okay.
And so your father, Chester, was born there, Chester Marion.
Yes, born in Mexico.
Okay.
And my mother was also born in Mexico because there was a colony of LDS people that went there to settle. And so even though Grandma was a Van Leeuwen, you know, they were in Mexico also. And they lived there until my dad was 11 years old. And then they were run out by Pancho Villa.
Okay.
Okay. And that's when they moved to Kaolin, Nevada for a while, and eventually went to Mount Trumbull in 1917. I believe that's when the Homestead Act came into play, and so he moved his family to Mount Trumbull.
Okay.
My dad was 16 years old at that time, and I guess you didn't have to be 18 to homestead. Anyway, my grandfather, and a homestead is 1 square mile.
That's 640 acres, is that right?
It sounds about right.
Okay. So 1 square mile.
Uh-huh. So my grandfather homesteaded, and all of his children, well, I guess, I'm not sure all of the children, but all of the boys all the boys had a homestead.
Okay, and did they back them? So if you had four homesteads, you had 4 square miles. At the common corner in the middle of those 4 squares, you could build 4 houses right next to each other.
Correct.
Is that what they did?
That isn't what they did. They somewhere on that square mile they built a home.
Okay.
But it wasn't in the corner.
Okay.
So we were far apart.
Okay.
They were probably in the opposite end of the homestead.
Okay. Okay. So I'm going to go back for a little bit to Pancho Villa, and I'm trying to remember the dates of this. Was this like 1906, 1912-ish time? Do you have a little more firmer time for when your family returned to the States from Mexico?
It was shortly thereafter.
Okay.
Shortly after Pancho Villa came in. And I don't have a date for that.
Okay.
I was looking for that this morning, and I couldn't locate that. I know that I have it somewhere, but I don't know where.
Okay. No worries. And for people who are new to these oral histories and new to Arizona, can you describe Mount Trumbull, where it is, where's the nearest town, what's geographically close by?
Sure. It is 60 miles south of St. George, Utah, on a dirt road. It is cut off, it is on the north rim of the Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon separates Mount Trumbull from the rest of Arizona.
Okay.
Okay. But it's still Arizona. It's a wild country. There are no gasoline stations, no grocery stores, no... we did have a school.
Okay.
But all of our shopping had to be done in St. George.
And how far away... Well, I'm sorry, that's 60 miles, right?
Uh-huh, 60 miles, right.
All right. So if you needed groceries, it was an all day affair or a days long affair.
It was, because back when they moved there, you know, it was before automobiles, and they had to do everything by wagon.
Oh my!
Yes.
So that's days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, to go to town, and a couple of days to come back.
Okay.
So you didn't go real often, and you would get supplies to last you, or what you thought would last you until, you know, for several months.
And life out there is difficult. I can't think that there's any mines. There's no businesses per se.
No. No.
How did they make a living of it?
Okay. We had, we grew our own wheat.
Okay.
And all of our own vegetables. We had a little orchard where we had fruit trees.
Like what kind?
Peaches and pears.
Okay.
That's mostly what I remember,
okay.
Peaches and pears. And then my dad had a brother that lived in St. George, and he also had a huge garden, and we would get grapes from him and cantaloupe and all kinds of melons. So when we would go to town, we'd go to his place, and he would give us, you know, his abundance.
Okay. Nice. And they had, St. George, of course, they had the Virgin River there, so they had a little better water supply.
Right. We had no water.
Okay.
We depended strictly on the rainfall.
Okay.
That's how our crops were watered You know, they dug ponds early on to hold the water for their cattle later.
Okay.
But when they first got there, stories are told about how they would, my aunt in particular, would melt snow in a tub over a fire in order to be able to water their horses.
Uh-huh. Okay.
when she came, they didn't have money or means to build a house right away, and so they, my uncle, made her a dugout a side of the mountain.
Yep.
And that's where she lived, was in that dugout for until they could build a home.
That land out there around Mount Trumbull, if it rains and gets enough water, it's beautiful. There's lots of grass.
Yes.
But if it doesn't rain, which oftentimes it doesn't,
right,
it suddenly turns back into desert, and it makes living. Can you tell me?
Next to impossible. We just had that experience this last summer. In fact, the last year has not been a lot of rain, and I grew up every day we prayed for rain.
My.
And this last, here just recently, when it was after 4th of July, I don't know when it was exactly, but rain finally came and filled the ponds. And my grandpa always said, just wait 2 weeks and the valley will be as green as if it were spring. And that's exactly what happened.
And how many years would you go between lake filling to lake filling?
Usually it would come every year, but recently, and I don't know if it's because of the climate change or mm-hmm. what it is, but it has not rained as much anywhere as it used to.
Okay.
And so, but it seems as though when it really gets, they get desperate, I mean, and really bad, and there have been years when they've had to haul water from one pond to a trough.
Okay.
Where the cattle were in order to be able to, for them to have water.
Right.
But it has always come.
Yeah, I know the Craigs story a little bit, Al Craig and their family, and it wasn't until he stumbled onto the 150-mile canyon grazing allotment that actually he could get his animals guaranteed down to water at the springs down in the canyon there.
Right.
And it just kind of made me step back a minute as you were speaking about this, thinking, water is the key important factor there, and if you don't have that, your livestock is really going to suffer. Of course, the family will as well.
Yes, that's right. And we did the same thing. My dad had grazing land down in what we called the canyon, Mule Canyon. And so they would take the cows down there for the winter.
What was the name of the canyon your dad had land in?
It was called Mule Canyon, M-U-L-E.
Okay, where's that in relation to, say, Whitmore Wash?
Okay, it is that same direction, except it's a little more south.
Okay.
You go down into that canyon. There was a mine.
Andrus Road, the Parashant area out that way?
Yes, it's kind of out that direction.
Okay.
Parashant, yes.
Yeah, how do you pronounce it?
Parashant.
Parashant, yes, okay. P-A-R-A-S-H-A-N-T.
S-H-A-U-N-T, I think.
Okay, thank you. All right. So, and was there a spring down in there that he could get the stock to?
No, he had no spring, but the rocks down in that canyon were a smooth sandstone type rock. and when it would rain, the water runs off those rocks.
Okay.
And he would build like a dam, and they called them pockets. And that rainwater would run off those rocks into the pockets.
Okay. So I'm familiar with a name out there called Paw's Pocket.
Yes. That was part of my grandfather's. That's where he took his cattle in wintertime, was Paw's Pockets.
Okay, that's P-A-W-S.
Yes.
And that again is a similar sandstone depression,
yes,
with a little dam, and it will fill with water.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And because it's rock, it holds the water very well.
Nice. Until the weather, of course, dried up, and it would evaporate away.
Right, right.
Gosh.
And by that time, you'd bring the cows out of the canyon,
okay,
and hope that you had water, you know, around the homestead, and they would stay there for the summer.
Hmm. And, of course, you'd be looking at the rain, as you mentioned. Who was it that was saying, just wait 2 weeks, this will all green up?
My grandfather.
Oh, okay.
Said, yeah.
Okay.
Just wait a couple of weeks. And my sister-in-law just sent me pictures about 2 weeks after it had rained, and it was just as green, as beautiful as ever.
Wow. When did your grandfather James, when did he pass away?
Oh, when did James pass away? I can look that up here.
Just roughly.
When do you think Grandpa James died?
I'm just wondering, do you have any memories of him as a little girl?
Oh, yes, yes.
Tell me about him.
James did not, he was a very quiet man.
Okay.
Yeah, like my husband says, unlike his wife, she kind of ran that house. Do it.
I'm sorry. Can you say again? He ran that house. Say again.
I say she ran the household. Grandma ran the household.
Oh.
And she would tell him what to do.
Okay.
And he would just say, "Okay, yes, ma'am, go do it."
Okay. Well, if she was smarter than him, that was a good idea.
Yeah.
What else do you remember about him?
Not a whole lot, because he was very, very quiet.
Okay.
We'd go to visit Grandma as her grandchildren. And he would just sit very quietly in the corner and just listen.
Okay.
Hardly ever say a word.
Hmm.
You know, he was just very, very reserved.
Okay. How many children did James and Chloe have? James had adopted two children.
Yes, and then they had... let me see. Hang on here just a second. I'm sitting at my computer.
Okay.
And I can go on.
Oh, that'd be great.
On Ancestry.com.
Okay.
And give you more information.
Super. And I want to make sure that I've got this right, that your grandfather, James, his wife was Chloe.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. James Bundy was born in 1887, and he died in 1977.
Okay. So you would have been, you were born in, 56, 66. So 76, you would have been 31 when he passed away.
Yes, it was, I know that I was married.
Okay.
Let's see. They were the parents of 9 sons and 5 daughters.
Okay. And how many of those 14 children settled in the Trumbull area, roughly?
Let's see. So he had the one daughter who was my mom that was there.
Your mom and dad, right?
Uh-huh. And then an Uncle Ben.
Was he out on the strip there, Mount Trumbull, or was he in St. George?
He was out on the strip.
Okay.
He homesteaded also.
Okay.
And another uncle, his name was Omer, but we called him Uncle Dick.
How do you spell that?
O-M-E-R.
Okay.
And Vivian was also homesteaded out there. V-I-V-I-A-N.
And did Vivian, so she would have been your aunt.
He's an uncle.
Oh, Vivian. Okay.
Yes, Vivian. We called him Uncle Pat.
Okay.
We hardly knew him at all by Vivian.
Okay.
And then one daughter, Edna, also homesteaded out there.
Oh, okay.
And Roy was another brother of his.
Another brother of your father's?
This was another brother of Jane.
Oh, the Bundys from Nebraska.
Right.
Came out.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So there was a good group of people out there.
Yes. There were quite a few people out there. I don't know how many were at the peak. When I was growing up, there were only about 21 of us that lived there, that still live there.
This was when you were going to school at Mount Trumbull?
When I was going to school at Mount Trumbull.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And that would
that
have been
adults and children.
56 to 60, roughly in that time frame?
Yes. I graduated from high school in 1963. But I had to go to St. George to go to school because the one-room schoolhouse that we had only went to the eighth grade.
Okay. Ah. So Mount Trumbull only went to the eighth grade. It's interesting because the Grand Canyon school at the South Rim only went to the eighth grade, and so all the people there had to figure out where their high school age children were going to go.
Uh-huh.
And y'all had the same issue.
Right. And you had to have eight children in the school in order for the state of Arizona to pay for the school teacher.
Oh, eight kids minimum.
Eight kids minimum.
Okay.
So I started first grade because Arizona did not have kindergarten at that time.
Okay.
So I started first grade at age four.
Okay.
So we'd have enough students in the school.
Oh, neat. Huh. Okay. What are some of your, let's see, I'm probably not done with the genealogy yet.
Okay.
You were born in 46. How many older brothers and sisters did you have?
My parents had 17 children.
Okay.
And so I have, there are four younger, four younger than I am. So I'm lucky number 13.
Okay. And in those days, especially in a, as difficult as life was there, childhood mortality was fairly high.
Yes, and we had an unusual situation. Mother lost six babies.
Oh my.
We had a genetic disease that we didn't find out about until my youngest brother was married, and that was cystic fibrosis.
Oh, yes.
And that's what they died from.
Okay.
And there was, you know, there's no cure for that. There's things they can do to help you, but there's no, you know, so that. And for years, we did not know what they died from because mother thought, well, it was a pneumonia-like situation, and she thought they died of pneumonia. So.
And of course, she could have been right. I mean, there were any number of difficult diseases that really, you know, mowed children down.
Back
in the day.
But if you look at the history of cystic fibrosis, there's a certain number of children. If you have so many children, this number will probably die of cystic fibrosis.
Oh, my.
And ours fit into that category.
Okay.
So we're pretty sure that that's what it was.
Okay. So what are some of your... So you're lucky 13. You're there. So you had quite a... your oldest brother or sister... older than you would have been mid-teens.
Yes, by the time I was born, my oldest living brother was 20 years older than I was.
Okay.
And he was married and had a child.
Okay.
He had a child shortly after I was born.
Okay.
Just within a few months.
All right.
So I never lived at home with him.
Right.
People say, well, how did your mom have 17 children in a one-bedroom house? Well, you know, the older ones were gone by the time the younger ones came along.
I think the answer to that is one at a time.
Yeah, that's right. And we were one at a time.
Yeah.
There are no twins in our family.
Okay. All right. Where was your ranch? Where was your home?
Our home was on the homestead. I grew up in the same one-bedroom house that Dad and my Uncle Dick had built.
Okay.
And it was built out of... is that one by 12 inch boards?
Yep.
And they were just slapped together. And, you know, of course, when you do that, there's wind that can blow through the cracks in the walls. There was no insulation back then.
Okay.
And so we would take the Sears catalog that would come in the mail and tear out the pages and put them in a flour water paste, and we would wallpaper the inside of our house to keep the wind from coming between the boards.
Yeah, okay.
And that's what we used for insulation.
Yeah, still drafty.
Still drafty, but, you know, every year we would take the pages of that catalog and tear them out and put them on the walls.
Okay. And from the Mount Trumbull Schoolhouse, there's a, from the schoolhouse, if we're sitting out on the porch, on the door facing east, there's a rise to the east, and if we walk and look to the south or off to the west and north, there's kind of flat country heading out there. Where was your place in relation to the schoolhouse?
Okay, if you walked out the back door.
Okay, to west.
Uh-huh. You would go about a mile, sort of at a diagonal, and that's where our house was.
Diagonal to the south or diagonal to the north?
Diagonal to the north.
Okay. All right. And so did you walk to school then?
Walk to school, yes.
Okay.
It was about 3/4 of a mile.
Okay.
To school.
All right. And again, there's no water. There's no spring out there nearby. Did you guys catch rainwater off the roof?
We did. We had a barn that was just up from out back of the house.
Okay.
A ways, and my dad put a galvanized metal roof on the barn.
Okay. Oh.
And then put a tank alongside of the barn, and that water would come off the barn and run into the tank. And we were the only ones in town that had what you would call running water, because he laid a pipe from that tank down to the house. And we had a hot water heater inside the house.
Oh.
This water would come into that hot water heater, and then we had a wood stove, and the wood stove had pipes inside of it, and the water would circulate inside those pipes, and that's how we would heat the water, and then it was stored in that hot water tank.
That's lovely, except that I would think it would increase the demand for water because it's warm. Oh, my goodness, the water's warm. Can I have some more?
Yes, right.
Oh, gosh. How
but
big?
You can only have warm water when you build a fire.
Well, yes, but let's go get some wood.
Yeah, in the summertime, you didn't want to build a fire.
Right.
Because it was too hot.
Yeah, okay. How big was that tank out by the barn?
Oh, my goodness. My brother were still alive, he could tell you, but
oh.
I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to say that it was maybe 500 gallons. Maybe it was only 300 gallons. Let me ask my husband, because he has a better gauge of
okay.
size. And so, Alan, How big do you think that water tank was? Water barn? No, it wasn't black. It was galvanized metal. No. This was the tank that was up by the barn. Well,
some hundreds of gallons then.
Yeah,
okay.
It was, how big was that tank down by the pond? Is that 500 gallons or more? Okay. I think this tank was probably about, you know, between 300 and 500 gallons.
Okay. And
we would store, and that would usually last us back then we got rain. I don't remember, only a couple of times do I remember going down to the pond and pumping water out of the pond to put in that tank.
Oh. So you would, if you had to, you could go to a pond and then pump water from the pond up to the tank,
right.
And that tank would feed the house.
Right.
Okay.
And that was the same pond that the cows drank out of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But who cared, because water was water.
That's right. It's a wonder any of us lived through that.
Well, You did. And so we all need to remember that sometimes the water might not look good, but it'll keep us alive.
That's right. That's right. And that water was just mainly for drinking and for cooking, washing dishes.
Okay.
You know, if we needed to take a bath or a shower, we'd go to the pond.
Okay.
Or one of the ponds. Dad was real careful in trying to make sure that he took water that we were going to use for cooking and drinking and all of that, washing, or it was right after a storm, so that it wouldn't be contaminated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, to get the water off the roof and put the tank up higher than the house, so the water would flow to the house under some pressure, gravity.
Right. Right. Gravity.
Yeah.
But it was. Yeah.
And I'm assuming that the bathroom was an outhouse, or you guys had an outhouse. The
bathroom was an outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yep. And the Sears catalog may come in handy there for toilet paper.
Oh, yes, it did.
Okay.
But you only used the yellow pages.
Why is that?
Because the yellow pages were softer.
Oh, okay.
They were thinner or something.
That makes sense.
But yeah, yeah. So the house didn't get papered with the yellow catalog paper.
Oh, okay.
It was the printed catalog paper.
Bonnie, where would you all go for wood? Because with a wood stove for cooking and for heating water, that requires a good amount of wood every winter.
Yes. Have you been out to Mount Trumbull, I assume?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So we would go up on the mountain. So if you were at the schoolhouse on the front porch,
mm-hmm.
that big mountain that is right out in front of there.
There are Hurricane Cliffs there, right out.
Yeah.
Right out to the east there. Okay.
Uh-huh. We would go up that road up on top of the mountain where there was lots of pine trees.
Yeah.
And, uh-huh, and that's where we gathered wood.
Okay.
Was up there.
All right.
And my dad loved to burn the pine knots.
Hmm.
And the pine knots are the limbs of the trees that come out of the dead wood.
Yes.
And and that is the knot, and that makes a really hot fire.
I bet. Okay.
Yeah.
And
we would go get loads and loads of that during the summer.
Were you using a wagon, horse and wagon,
nope,
for that, or truck?
Nope. We used a truck.
Okay.
By the time I came along, the automobiles were here, and we had those. So.
Okay. And then so 40, I'm thinking 1950, maybe your memories go back that, you know, maybe when you're four or five or so, six.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming y'all didn't have a chainsaw, because that would have been expensive with.
Right. No chainsaw.
Okay.
Just an axe.
All right.
And dad would hit the end of those dead trees. Those limbs on the dead trees, and those knots would just fall out.
Ah, okay.
And then we would gather them up and throw them in the back of the truck.
And so did he have a couple axes for some of your older brothers?
Yes. Yeah. That they could use. You had to be a certain age before you could use the axe, so.
Okay.
I don't remember what that was. I never had to use the axe, so.
Okay. And I'm also thinking about food. So you're going to have a truck garden as best as you can. What kind of animals did you have? I'm thinking eggs, chickens, cattle, maybe sheep. What are the sort of?
Yes, we had cows. By the time I was born, my dad was just doing cattle. He herded sheep. In about 1924.
Okay.
In 1940, he sold his sheep and bought 25 head of cattle.
Okay.
And then from then on, so by the time I was born, we were doing cattle.
Did he ever say why he made that change?
Yes, because when you have sheep, you have to stay with them.
Oh.
And go with them. And he herded a lot of sheep up on Cedar Mountain in Utah.
Okay.
And
where's that?
That is north and a little bit east of St. George.
Okay.
Quite about 50, 60 miles.
Oh, so past Zion, past the national park.
Yeah. Cedar City, you know where Cedar City is located?
Yep.
It's just off to the east of Cedar City, not far.
Okay, so that would be, did he have some family over there?
No. No, he had no family. It was strictly, he was strictly a sheep herder.
Okay.
And he would go and be gone for months at a time.
Up on the forest?
4 months at a time.
National?
Up with those sheep and,
National Forest.
Cedar Mountain.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then did he have would he take a truck for that, or did he have, in the 20s, would
no.
he have a wagon he was living in?
He had a wagon. They called it a sheep wagon.
Okay.
And it was a wagon that they would live in that they pulled. I'm not sure. I assume maybe it was a vehicle then. Because he didn't sell his sheep till 1940.
So your mom, Guinevere, she would have been with the family all alone then. Well, of course, she would have had other family within a mile in any direction, but still, Chester, and did he go by Chet? Was that
He went by Chet.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Chet would be off with the sheep. If something happened, she'd have to take care of it and sort it out.
Yes, right. Grandma lived not too far away.
Okay.
She was about half a mile from us.
Okay.
Her house. And so, we spend a lot of time there.
Okay.
As kids.
Okay. And I'm assuming it was a challenging job for your mom, not only to raise the children, but to keep the garden going and keep the animals going and find food for the table.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't remember that being hard times or difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was, and I'm sure she worried about it a lot. But we were just kids, you know? I mean, this is what everybody did.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
I started milking the cow when I was 5.
Okay.
Because my older siblings, some of them were gone. Anyway, that became my chore, my responsibility.
Okay.
And so every morning and every night. And I would have to go down to the field to gather the cow and bring her home because she didn't want to come home.
What was her name?
Come back. The cow?
Yeah.
Oh, we had several. We had one that was named Bonnie.
Okay.
When we got her, that was what the previous owner had called her. And so that's, yeah. And I haven't thought about those names in a long time.
I bet you haven't. But if you called out to Bonnie or whichever cow you were milking, would they come over? Because they wouldn't.
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
No.
Now you're 5 years old. How are you going to get that cow over to milk it?
Yeah, you have to go down and round them up, get behind them, and drive them home.
Okay.
If they had a calf, we would keep the calf locked up at night during the day.
Okay.
And so if they had a calf, they would usually come on their own because they had milk and they wanted to get rid of that milk.
Yes, yes.
You know, but when they didn't, when we weaned the calf from them, then they had nothing to come home for.
Right, right.
So,
and were you keeping the calf locked up at night for its protection from coyotes or other creatures?
Well, usually we kept it locked. Yes, with The calf would be with the cow at night most of the time. But then we had to separate it. If it was still nursing, we'd have to separate them at night because otherwise it would get up and get the milk.
Right. You wouldn't have any.
Get in the morning.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So, yeah, we would let the calf have some milk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
After we had already milked the cow, then it could have some milk. But
okay.
Then we would feed it. I mean, as soon as it was big enough to be on grain, why we fed it.
Got it. And did you have enough milk to make some butter?
Oh, yes. We made butter. We made cottage cheese.
Okay.
Before I was born, my older siblings talked about making cheese.
Okay.
They would make their own cheese. But we never made cheese when I was young.
Okay.
I don't know why. I guess it was just easier to buy it. I don't know. So consequently, I have no clue how to make cheese.
Okay. Okay. And did you have chickens?
We had chickens.
Okay.
Yes, and dogs.
Okay.
I'm
just trying to think about other food.
Turkey.
Other animals for food.
Some turkeys, we had pigs.
Okay. Ah, all right.
And, you know, Dad would slaughter the pigs,
mm-hmm.
and we would be able to have that meat. But we very rarely had beef to eat.
Okay.
Because they were to sell. The cattle were to sell.
Oh, really? Okay.
Uh-huh. And so I grew up on venison.
Okay.
When I got married and had to start eating beef because we had no venison, it was the worst time of my life.
Why? Because, tell me more.
My palate had gotten used to the venison.
Okay.
And I liked that wild game taste.
Oh, gosh.
Uh-huh. And to have to start eating beef, it was just awful. It was terrible.
Wow.
And now take me back the other way. Oh, my goodness. I can hardly eat the venison.
Oh, my.
I've been eating beef for so long.
Oh, my.
Yeah, huh. But that's what the city does to you.
Well, yeah, and I'm just thinking, how many people know how to milk a cow? How many people know how to make butter out of the milk that they milked out of the cow? You know, and
right.
to deal with turkeys and pigs, and well, you do if you're living on a ranch or a farm, but if you're not, uh-huh. then you don't. So
then you don't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Rabbits. Did you hunt? Did your family hunt? Besides deer?
Yes. Whenever we would go to check the water in the ponds or to check on any of the cows that were out in some of the other further away pastures, we could take a .22 with us, and we would stand up in the back of the truck, and when we saw a rabbit, Dad would stop, and we got to shoot the rabbit.
Okay.
And if it was a cottontail, then we brought it home and cooked it and ate it. But the rabbits were too gamey and too tough.
The bigger jackrabbits?
Yes.
With the big lopy ears?
Yes. But we'd bring those home and skin them for the dogs.
Okay.
That's what the dogs had to eat.
They were probably glad to get them.
Oh, yes. Very happy to get them.
Okay.
Because otherwise, we didn't buy dog food. The only food they had were scraps that were left from the table. You know, if a younger sibling didn't eat all of his cereal, then he could have the dogs could have the oatmeal, you know.
Okay. But I bet the pigs would have wanted that too. So it's like, okay, how do you know, who gets what?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
Bonnie, we've been yik-yakking away here about not quite an hour.
Oh,
I wonder if this is a good place to put a comma on this interview and we'll pick this up again next time. What do you think?
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay. Is there anything else? I'm going to want to ask you more about your childhood and your growing up. But okay. Is there anything else in what we have talked about now that you want to add to what we've gone over, just so we don't forget it?
Not that I can think of. I think we've done a pretty good job in covering all of that.
Okie doke.
Alan mentioned something. He talked about the big tank.
Yes.
It was 12 feet across and probably 9, 10 feet high.
Oh, this is up at the barn?
This tank was not at the barn. This tank was down by one of the ponds that was close to the house.
Okay.
And the reason we had that tank there was because that pond did not hold the water. It would evaporate it or it would leak or it would whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as the rain had come, Dad would take and pump that water from the pond into this tank.
Oh. How would he do and that? Did he have a little gas-powered pump or would he do it by hand?
A little gas-powered pump.
Okay.
With a hose that went down into the pond and sucked out the water, and then he built a solid line, pipeline across, because it was across the road, that crossed up above the road and over into that tank. And we would fill that tank, and that tank would store water for months and months and months.
Okay.
Keep the water in there.
And water is life. As they say, it's very precious. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And when we would run out of water, you know, we used that water to water the garden and to water the fruit trees. Because you have to have water, and so, and sometimes the cattle got to use it too, but not, usually it was maybe just the milk cow.
Okay.
Got to drink that water.
Okay.
So anyway.
And that tank was down below the house, below
that
your home?
That was below our home. So it didn't have, we didn't have any water from that tank that was piped to the house.
Right. But you could go get water from there if you needed to haul water to the house because the other one was empty.
Yeah. And do you know how to get water out of a great big tank like that?
Carefully. No, I don't.
Well, you take a hose that was probably at least 4 or 5 inches in diameter, and you throw this hose, the whole thing, over into the tank. And then you hold your hand over one end of the hose, the end of that's not in the tank.
Yep.
You hold your hand over it, and then you start running just as fast as you can, as hard as you can, pulling that hose out of the tank with your hand over the end of it, and drop it down on the ground, and that's how you siphon the water out.
Yeah, you'd start a siphon.
Uh-huh.
You bet, and then you could get it up and over. So it wasn't like you had a valve at the bottom of the tank that you would turn.
Right, right. That's how you got the water out of the tank.
Okay. I bet you got good at that.
Oh, I got real good at that. And I'll tell you later about sucking the gas hose too.
All right. What we'll do is we'll finish this interview up, and then don't hang up when I'm done with the wrapping it up here. And then we'll talk about what we're going to talk about next time. So that'll be good.
Okay.
So hang on here a minute. And this will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Bonnie McAllister. Today is Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Bonnie, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.